really gave you the full Knicks experience. If you're a Knicks fan or just a basketball fan, you hated the team for the first, you know, hour and a half. And then it turned into raw motion as Karl Anthony Towns led this ferocious comeback. And the Knicks took the Indiana Pacers out in Game 3 to make it 2-1. And how, if you were being recorded during this game, or you were tweeting during this game, or you were calling your friends during the game, and you had a chance to listen back to the way you were acting, you'd be like, oh my God, listen to the way I sounded. Well, here at WFAN, we have that ability because we have live programming. You know, we got radio shows going on. Unless there's a Yankee game or we split the signal, there's, you know, live sports talk radio going on basically all the time. So last night, the lucky man was Al Cintron, who's a diehard Knicks fan.
Sunday night.
What did I say?
Last night.
Sunday night. I get the days confused.
It does feel like
man.
A Monday, though. We're off Memorial Day.
You're right. On Sunday night, Al Cintron was the lucky individual to be on during the Knicks game. And I'll tell you this about Al, if you're not familiar with him. He's a diehard Knicks fan. Like, if I was power ranking the Knicks fans here at WFAN, obviously Tommy is number one. I think we all know that. But Al's up there. He could be number two. Maybe number three. He's up there. So this is a tricky spot for him to be on the air during Knicks Pacers. Let's take a listen and hear how it sounded.
Because what I'm watching right now is an embarrassment. Embarrassing. Down 15. Embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. Anything more, Al? Especially once it got to 20?
Yeah, can we get the funeral music playing? Hey, this is disgusting. I don't even know what to say. The Knicks have pretty much quit in the second quarter. They've quit. They've quit. The sorry-ass Knicks have quit in game 3 of the second quarter. And if anybody tries to spin this in a positive way, you can kiss my ass. This is disgusting. To watch this nonsense, this mess, after losing at home, choking away game 1, choking it away, and then in game 2, come out with no fight, have to fight back the whole game, crawl back the whole game from behind, and in the fourth quarter, no show, and now this. Season on the line, backs against the wall, down 4 after one quarter, and now you're down 20.
I love Al Cintron.
Was he talking about Tommy when he said, if you're being positive, kiss my ass?
I think he was, and this is what I would say. I am a recently new uncle. So from one Theo to another, when you come at the king, you best not miss.
Wow.
And positive Tommy is unkillable. I love you, Al, but you gotta just ride the positive Tommy wave. So that's the best way to go about it.
Do you think after hearing that you're a better Knicks fan than Al?
No. I think that Al is in an unenviable position that it just sucks. It's just part of our business. To be on the air when your team is playing a playoff game it's a tricky spot, Mike.
It is tricky.
I'm glad you said that because all I could think about while listening to that clip of poor Al, because I would say poor Al, like it's horrible. The team's getting their ass kicked. We all probably thought the same thing as the game was going on. But all I could think about was, wouldn't it be worth it for all of us to have to have heard Tommy Lugauer in that spot?
Because he can't hide.
Yeah, what would you have done if you're on the radio, sort of talking about it, and they're down 20 and they're quitting on the court, as Al said? Like, that's a tough one to spin in live real time, bro.
I wouldn't have had to spin anything as I'm watching the game. Like, immediately when the Pacers went up 20, the Knicks responded. So I would have just taken a deep breath. I would have had my positive Tommy. You know, I'm an old-time vibes guy.
I won't lead us.
I'm telling you, look at the text that I sent Sean. I'm not going to read them here on the air, but I felt it the whole way. They ended that first half brilliantly, and you could just feel the air sort of being sucked out of the building.
But remember, we've run this test on Tommy before. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even acknowledge Juan Soto's first spring training home run because he said he didn't want to lose the audience. I think Tommy, the way he went out of it, Al's pouring his heart out there, Tommy would have acted like the Knick game wasn't happening.
Or he would have ignored the Knick game, yeah.
It's different schools of thought. There's probably no right answer when you're on during a playoff game and what to do. I probably would have thought, you know what, I'm going to preach the power of positivity, but the only people listening to me are probably haters anyway, the coalition, so maybe it would have worked in their favor being mad at me.
Speaking of the coalition, I can't believe this exchange occurred, but as the Knicks were down by 20, there may have been an exchange courtesy of Sean Morash with me where he was asking about who's bringing in the broom on Tuesday.
Are you effing kidding me right now?
Who's bringing in the broom on Tuesday?
Is that so, Evan?
Can you believe that?
Is that so? Oh, I'm going to just randomly pull up my text messages with Evan now.
Yeah.
That's what you want to tell the audience? You want to think about that?
I've thought about it. I've said it. There was a conversation about who's going to bring the broom in. I'm thinking to myself, who's going to bring the broom in?
Evan, I mean, if it's not for the picture I send you, I would release this to the internet. Sunday, 9:09 p.m. Tommy, you care to hear this one?
9:09. So this is probably like towards the end of the first half.
9:09 p.m. Who's bringing in the broom emoji in on Tuesday? That from Evan Roberts. I did admittedly respond with a picture of me.
Exactly!
In an Indiana jersey.
I set you up! I know I asked it! And I was hoping you would say, come on, man, it's still only game three.
No. You wanted, this is typical of Evan. He wants everybody else to be the Knicks haters so he can do this. 10:07 p.m., Evan, text me back, burn the broom. I have a terrible feeling about this now.
Which is exactly what I've said on the air today. That everything changed.
And then the best is, I send him my bet ticket at +800. Evan responds, I got him at +650.
You two are both sick maniacs.
For
we both made money on Sunday night.
Well, because you could feel the momentum changing. You could call it emotional hedging. I call it being smart.
But how dare you say that I was the one looking to bring the broom? You're the one who started it.
No, I tested you to see what you...
No, that was not a test.
Of course it was.
Tommy?
That was a test.
Tommy?
No, Evan wants you to take the fall for that.
Of course.
You to be the bad guy.
I wanted to see if you had learned your lesson. Because, as some of you may know, when the Rangers were up 2-0 on the New Jersey Devils a couple years ago... Sean had a video of him sweeping out his bar.
I did.
He's taken a lot of heat from that, including from the New Jersey Devils themselves. So I was testing our friend Sean to see if he had learned his lesson from Rangers Devils, and the answer is no!
Now.
He learned nothing from that.
Had Carl Anthony Towns not come alive, would you have seen a similar video? You might have, and we'll never know about it.
Oh, we were definitely getting that video. 100%.
Point is, incredible comeback. And I think the raw emotion you heard from Al or the raw emotion you heard from haters like Sean show you that's what was being thought about at halftime of that game. So let this be a lesson tonight. Whether you're going to Indiana, whether you're watching this out at the watch party at Madison Square Garden, whether you're with your brother or your girlfriend or your sister, relax, it's 48 minutes.
And if anybody tries to spin this in a positive way, you can kiss my ass.
That's my favorite part of it.
Can I do something real quick before you go to a call?
Of course.
I'm going to admittedly do something. I'm going to bring this into the Giants, but I'm acknowledging that I am.
I love now every time he wants to bring up the Giants, he has to acknowledge, I know I'm bringing this to the Giants, but I'm going to bring it up.
I find Al extremely entertaining, maybe because he's a lot like me, just with different teams, with the roller coaster emotions. I never wanted the Giants to win week one over the Commanders, his Commanders, more. I just need to hear him crying like that.
Yeah.
Can I just say one other thing?
My Washington Commanders!
Calm down, Al. This is what I would say, and this is in response to what Al said. So after game two on Friday night, obviously I was in the building, I tweeted out, no biggie, Knicks in 7, take it to the bank. 300 comments later, none of them were very great in my favor. People were mad at me. Was I not right? Was I not right? It was no biggie. Now we have Evan here a couple days later saying the series is over in the Knicks.
And me and Evan might have been texting back and forth no biggie plenty on Friday night.
Dude, I love no biggie. I think no biggie needs to be a part of the sports lexicon now. Like, yeah, no biggie.
The Yankees lost that first game of the Rockies. No biggie.
No biggie.
Down 20? No biggie.
Like, if the Mets blow a game tonight to the White Sox, like a 5-run lead in the ninth inning, I'm no biggie. That's my thing. Like, you have created, I think, a phrase that's going to live on in sports history forever. No biggie.
I agree.
So it's just no biggie. Let's go to Shamar calling up from Buffalo, New York. How are you, Shamar?
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm all with you, man. Just two, three quick points. The plus minus for McBride is +25 and Bridges is -20. I really think they need to get McBride on the floor more. And I also like having a McBride at the point and when Brunson's on a bench because I think we could get Cat the ball. I think the main thing with Cat is not just staying out of foul trouble, but getting him the ball and not being stuck on the side. But with McBridges and OG, we got to get one of those guys out of there because the plus minus for the whole starting lineup is pathetic. But Lamy Shamet played a lot of big minutes this year in the regular season, as has McBride. And I like Delonio Wright. If I've never seen that guy, oh my God,
Campaign
in a Knick uniform in life, it would be way too soon. I don't want to see that guy.
The difference to your point with Campaign is that he's a chucker. You know, Tommy was making fun of the Celtics. They're the Boston Chuckers, and it was humorous. Cameron Payne is a chucker. And the thing about chuckers is that when they go down, it's electric. When they go down and you've got, you know, a red-hot campaign like we saw in Game 1 against Detroit It's great. Like, who doesn't want points? I mean, it's fun. It's exciting. But can you help this team when you're not scoring? Deuce McBride is the definition of that because what he brings defensively. So here's the deal with Mikal Bridges. We've had a lot of fun with Mikal Bridges this year because of all the picks they gave up. Mm-hmm. When he is on, and we've seen him on, we've seen him make key defensive stops, walk-off defensive plays, if you will. Mikal Bridges is one of the most important players on the floor. But Absolutely. Then there are times in which he's just wildly inconsistent. And so I think what you need to do, if you're Tom Thibodeau, and he did a great job of this in Game 3, is you play what works. You play what works. If you find something that works, like he did, shockingly, with the Shamet, Wright, McBride, Towns, Hart, quintet, if you will. Is that the right word? Quintet? Yeah, quint is five.
Yeah, because quart is four.
Yeah, quartet is four. Trifect is three. Double deucer is two. Quint is five, right? So in the quintet that he put together, you like that?
I do like double deucing, yes.
I'll tell you something that's really confusing, and you really get into a tiki rabbit hole if you do this. So we all know 1,000, million, billion, trillion, but how far can you go? How many can you get to before you tap out? So we're at trillion. What comes after trillion? You guys want to play the game?
Quarillion.
No.
Fulfillion?
No.
Damn it.
Quadrillion.
Oh, I was close.
But
dude,
you got it wrong. Now we get to the next one. It's quintillion. And then it's septillion. And then it's sesselion. Ochillion.
You're making this up.
Well, I think as I get to 7 and 8, I am screwing it up. I wouldn't say making it up, but it does follow that lineage.
Were you about to say Sicilian?
I think I was about to say Sicilian.
Nice pizza.
And then when you get to 100 zeros, it's actually Gogoplex. Swear to God. That's actually a real term.
Go-go-plex. That's what Soto has.
What?
Gogoplex.
What that, I don't even know what that means.
The most richest man in the world.
Yeah, but it's not even close to Gogoplex. You know there aren't even a Gogoplex amount of sand kernels on planet Earth? That's how big that number is?
Did you do anything this weekend?
No, I knew this from before this weekend. This had nothing to do with this weekend.
You knew how many sand kernels are in the U.S.?
I learned that a couple years ago. I went on one of these binges when it comes to numbers a long time ago, but I remember some of them. My binges this weekend are things that actually involve the show, and I don't want to reveal it yet because it's kind of embarrassing, and Tommy's going to be very mad at me, and I'm afraid to tell him.
First of all, I don't even know where that goes, but I have to make a statement.
Yes.
Whoever claimed in their studies they have figured out how many sandals of kernels of sand there are is a liar. They made up some ridiculous number that everybody realized would be so ridiculous to ever fact check that they took them at their word.
Oh, you think they're lying about that?
I think there is no way to quantify how many kernels of sand there are on Earth.
I'm going to answer you with this. Obviously, we don't know the exact number. But what scientists do is, hey, based on the amount of sand kernels that would be on a mile of beachfront, we know how big the world is. That's our estimate, our rough estimate on how many sand kernels there are. And again, no one gave you the exact number. All they told you was Gogoplex is bigger than that number.
Okay. All right, but then you got bags of sand that are sold. There's like 50 million kernels in the
bottom
of my pool now.
I want you to Google it right now. You have a computer in front of you?
Here we go.
How many sand kernels are on planet Earth? And I'm telling you, it's lower than Gogoplex.
How many sand
kernels? Which is a real number. You know what's not a real number? Zillion. People use that like, oh, I'm a zillionaire. That's not even a real number. It's a made-up number. Zillion? There's no zillion. It's not real. I'm telling you, look it up. Fake word. Fake word. Let's go to Bobby in Mattawan. How are you, Bobby?
What's up, guys?
Yo.
Seven quintillion.
Good to talk to you, Evan. I'm a huge Mets fan. I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, we appreciate it, man. What's on your mind?
I have to say the key to Indiana's offense is Pascal Siakam. Mm. And I think Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby are the same player, but Pascal has the edge on Anunoby. He's got his number. Because if you notice, Anunoby, whenever he dribbles, he likes to dribble around the hoop. Pascal reaches in and he knocks the ball away. He disrupts his dribble. OG's not the same player he is against other players.
I wonder, it's a good observation. I wonder if it's because of their familiarity with each other. Obviously, they were teammates in Toronto. Siakam was a big part of that team in 2019 that won the NBA championship. So I wonder if, A, if they're even like close, or if it's one of those, yeah, we were teammates, but we hated each other's guts. Or if it's, hey, we are friends, but we have that competitive juice against each other. I think it's a really good point.
Like, maybe OG's a little jealous of Siakam that he's actually part of the title run.
Well, OG was. He just didn't play.
Well,
he got a ring.
He got a ring, but he didn't play. You know,
no, I know.
The title run.
We went over this with who is left in the NBA playoffs. Oh, I know what you're doing. You're taking a shot at Giannotti because he screwed that up this morning.
I'm not doing anything.
That's very nice. Why don't you just directly take a shot at him instead of going
to the side? People are entitled to mistakes.
Just do it.
I wasn't naming him, but it is true in this context.
Okay.
With Siakam and OG. And yes, okay, so Gio overlooked that OG didn't play in that run.
Well, OG.
We've all made mistakes. I'm not going to come for that.
I was going back over this when the NBA playoffs began. Like, who is left who's won a championship? And OG Anunoby was one of the guys. Pascal Siakam was one of the guys. Right. Who were the other three that we had that won titles?
It was Dante.
Oh, Caruso.
And Alex Caruso.
And Dante DiVincenzo. And what was funny about all of them except for Siakam.
And Thomas Bryant. Right?
And Thomas Bryant.
Right.
So Thomas Bryant is out of the rotation now. Caruso was a big part of that Laker team. He's a big part of the Thunder team. He's a useful bench player, but he's not a star. OG got hurt, I think, like early in that playoff run, or did he miss the entire playoffs? I think he may have got hurt in like game one or game two of the first round of that series. So he was out, and then you've got Siakam, who was a big part of that Raptor championship team.
And PJ Tucker, the only one to not come off the bench for the Knicks.
And PJ Tucker, who still hasn't come off the bench yet.
But yet he's arguing with the refs. Did you see that the other night?
Well, I think PJ Tucker is one of those guys. He's like he's got this value to him, even if we can't see it. And we've heard players talk about it, how much he talks, how much he peps the guys up, how much he works the officials. That Tucker is a big part of this Knicks team, even though he never plays. But it's a fair point about the Siakam-OG Anunoby rivalry. I'll tell you one thing I also noticed is Josh Hart looked so much better defensively coming off the bench. And he ended up playing 34 minutes anyway. That's the funny thing about it.
He almost had a relieved look on him when he was on the floor. Like, it was just his confidence came back. You know what? I was the non-selfish one. I came off the bench. Let me just do my thing.
Yeah.
And he really is built to be a great sixth man anyway.
Oh, 100%. Hart, as a starter, never fit. We just kept running with it because it worked. I mean, he was a big part of the team last year, obviously, with all the injuries that they had. And even this season, you know, at first you thought he makes sense off the bench. Then he ends up starting, and it never changed. But look, Josh Hart comes off the bench. And what I thought was so funny about Josh Hart, and we don't have to play the clip right now because I'll just explain it to you. Josh Hart, when asked about coming off the bench, pulled a Francesa. Was like, well, you know, I was part of the decision. Okay. And I did. I was made. Right, me and Dibs, we talked about it together. Okay. And I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically what he said. Actually, you know what? I changed my mind, Rosie. Do you have a clip of Josh Hart bragging that he was the decider and coming off of the bench? Because I like Josh Hart. I do. You know, he's funny. Even when I gave him crap in the locker room that one time, he gave it back to me. I appreciate that. Here's Josh Hart basically saying, yeah, coming off the bench, my idea.
Back of my mind, and I've always been willing to do. And, you know, down to, especially with how he played last game, it was just, you know, that's something that we had to do. And obviously that's a group decision that really boils down to Tibbs and myself. But for me, it wasn't a tough day. It was funny because everyone would say something to me, or guys would text me on other teams and all that. And I'm like, bro, I don't care. I don't care if I start. I don't care if I play 20 minutes. If we win, we win. If we, you know, you can't name me who won the championship 2 years ago.
That's enough. Basically, he doesn't care, which I think is a great answer. I think it's a very endearing answer by Josh, whether he was a part of the decision or not. It doesn't even matter. But it was funny. Me and Tibbs made the decision together. Okay. He asked me. He texted me, what do you think? I said, okay. I said, that's actually my idea. Yeah.
After hearing that clip, I wish we could have our hands on Josh Hart's phone, because that means other guys on other teams were taking you-know-whats on other players on the Knicks saying, this guy should be sitting, not you.
Well, I don't know if it was that. I think it was more, you've started all year. Are you offended that before game three you're being benched?
I believe.
That's how I take it.
There's at least one NBA player that texted Josh Hart going, really? And Kat's going to start, not you?
Well, Kat's going to start. Kat's a freaking all-star caliber player.
I understand that.
It's more
but
Mitch. It's more, you believe it's starting.
No,
that?
But we were progressing towards Mitch.
Though. No, I know, but think about the other guys on this roster. Who would come off the bench?
We talked about this Friday, and we thought it would be ridiculous because this is all-star nature, but Kat actually made the most sense.
No, that's not what I said.
I believe that's what me and Tiki said.
That's what you two said. Do you remember what I said? Josh Hart! That's what I said.
Always comes back to Evan being right.
Well, because you just brought it up. I wasn't going to bring it up. But you said, we both wanted Kat coming off the bench. I'm like, no, I didn't want that. To me, the guy who always made sense coming off the bench was Josh Hart.
And look when Kat was at his best, playing with the other bench guys.
Yeah, absolutely. The ball was in his hands, man.
Speaking of being right and wrong here, and we like to, tighten up loose ends, I've never heard the phrase kernel of sand before. I've always heard the word, it's grain of sand.
Oh, yeah, same thing, yeah.
Well, no, it's not.
I did Google kernel of sand and couldn't find it.
It's not the same thing. Is there kernels of sand?
No, I swear.
No, it's grains of sand. All right, yeah. I was losing my mind.
Now, did you search how many grains of sand are there on planet Earth?
I did, and again, it's giving you some weird 7.5 × 10^18 grains of sand, or as it equates to 7 quintillion.
Quintillion, see what I'm talking about? That's the 7.
I don't believe it.
After, wait, quint is 5. So that's after trillion and quadrillion, then it comes that number.
It's actually 7,500,000,000,000 grains of sand.
Oh, wow.
So, but it's still far less than Gogoplex, because Gogoplex is 100 of that. So if billion is 2, if trillion is 3, if quadrillion is 4, if quintillion is 5, Gogoplex is 100.
Gogoplex also just sounds like somewhere you'd have a kid's birthday party.
I know. It sounds like such a weird name. I'm sorry. I know that you really want me to read this, but Matt in Hillsborough wants to talk about these numbers, and they're fascinating. What's up, Matt?
Well, how's it going, gentlemen? Well, Sean kind of stole my thunder, but a couple of quick points. I'll make them fast.
Yes.
First off, Kiki not being there is phenomenal because I love listening to the English language kick all your butts. It's phenomenal. I'm not going to correct you guys.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Dude, PJ Tucker did play against the Celtics because a man came on wearing a T-shirt, old school, under his top.
Yeah, he came out, I think, in the final minutes of the blowout in Game 6, which you could count it, but it really doesn't count.
Yeah, but and also, Josh Hart, there's a quote of him talking, I don't know who he's talking to, but he goes, you grab rebounds, he goes, I go grab rebounds that break their back. I'm like, that is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, he's got, Josh has always had a swagger to him, but along with that swagger is the humble nature of being cool with coming off of the bench. Because I do think there are a lot of guys in this league, a lot of them, that wouldn't be good with that. A lot of guys. Carmelo Anthony had issues with it at first when the approach was come off the bench. And obviously, a more established superstar than Josh Hart ever was, but there is a humbleness to Josh Hart. And I think what Josh Hart does is he understands who he is. And a lot of athletes don't. You know, a lot of athletes think they're superstars or they're better than what they are. And I think Josh understands that his game is based on hustle. His game is based on aggressiveness. And while there's a great value to him, that he can come off the bench and it's not insulting. And I'll tell you the other thing that I thought was humbling as well. I thought Jalen Brunson being cool, not coming into a game until a minute and a half to go. Like, that's the superstar. That's the guy. And Jalen Brunson understood it. And I don't think he was lying to the media. I don't think he was lying there with his emotions. I think it was, hey, I trust this head coach. And if this head coach wants me standing here until there's a minute and a half to go, I'm good with it.
I've been told we have to take one more call before we go to break.
Okay.
Let's go to Joe in Cranford. Joe, what's up?
Evan, while you're waxing poetic on your mathematic knowledge, it's not Gogoplex, it's Googleplex. Jesus.
It's G-O-O-G-O. L-plex. Isn't that Gogoplex?
It's pronounced Googleplex.
Like, I'm a loser. Like Google, like you're searching something on the internet?
That's right.
Is that where Google got its name from?
You know what? Possibly. It actually makes a lot of sense.
Gogoplex. Like it's a movie theater, you jackass.
You know who I blame for this? I actually have to blame somebody. I got to blame my 8-year-old son, Jet.
Are you kidding me?
He's obsessed with Gogoplex, and he calls it Gogoplex, so I've just repeated him.
Oh,
so,
no.
My apologies. I'm going to go home and teach him.
You're citing and sourcing an 8-year-old in front of millions of people on the radio. That's who you went with?
You've met this 8-year-old. He's a lot smarter than you, Tommy.
Oh, but that doesn't take much. But, I mean, you know, he was wrong in this spot.
By the way, Google's name is from that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It is from that.
Gogoplex is the largest number, or it's equivalent to 10 to the 10th power to the 100th power, or it's 10 and then like a bunch of zeros. It's got 100 zeros following the 10. So, yeah. It's a very big number.
And we all feel like idiots because we took Evan's word for it.
Sounds right. All right. Googleplex. Even though it's not spelled like Google, it's G-O-O-G-O-L plex. There you go. We got a brand new edition of Posted and Toasted coming up. Plus, Tommy has to answer a very big question. The day after Karl-Anthony Towns was acquired, he said he's a cat who he needs to earn his dogness. Did Game Time earn his dogness? Brand new edition of the ever-popular game Posted and toasted.
It's time for Boasted and Toasted.
Of course, I'll read the old tweets of our fellow WFAN co-workers. We'll see if Sean and Tommy can figure out who posted it, and we'll decide if we want to toast them. Are you ready?
Let's go.
This is from March 26, 2022. Bad job by Thibs bringing fans into the equation. Don't blame us for the constant fourth quarter collapses and overall indifference from the team's star players. That's weak. Not having it, coach. Wow. Is that...
Pump that music. I know who
that
it is.
That really excites me.
I know who this is.
I haven't even given a hint, and you already know who it is?
By the last three words of that tweet, I know who it is. But
that's weak, not having it, coach. You know based on that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's Brandon Tierney.
I was wrong.
How did you know that?
So one thing I've noticed listening to BT, as long as I've listened to BT,
yeah.
BT loves referencing the coach as his coach or Boone as Skip.
Oh.
So he'll always end something like coach or Skip. It's just like a BT thing I've picked up.
So if I had never included that last part of the tweet, you would have been more stumped on it?
The moment he ended with, come on, coach, or whatever, I knew it was BT.
I don't remember Tom Thibodeau blaming fans. Did that actually happen at the end of the 2022 season? Of course, the 2022 season was the forgotten Thibs year, right? So the first year he got here, Knicks made the playoffs coming out of the pandemic, the Julius Randle year lost to Atlanta. The following year, this is the year we're talking about, they finished under 500 and missed the playoffs. They backed that up, obviously, with three consecutive seasons of getting to the second round. So Tom's been here for 5 years in the playoffs. Four of them, the one year they missed the playoffs was 2022, and this is the year in question.
He's blaming fans for something. I don't remember that story either.
Yeah. All right, let's go to November 12th, 2014. A signed guitar by Bernie Williams has to have the same value as me signing my deck hockey stick from the eighth grade. Who posted that?
Me. Best wiener I've ever had in my mouth.
You knew that immediately?
Absolutely, because I don't want to dump on the guy. I love Bernie
Williams. Well, you just dumped on Bernie Williams, so dump on him again.
I want to make this clear. I love Bernie Williams. Top five Yankee of me all time. Great that he could play the guitar as well as he can. If he was not the center fielder for the New York Yankees, he's no better than some of the people we hear playing happy hour around the city. But he gets all these big gigs because he's Bernie Williams.
Jeez. This is a really haterific line.
It's not a hater, but it's true.
I think he's a damn good guitar player.
He shouldn't apologize. It doesn't. By the way, my point is, there are a ton of really good guitar players that never get the, I don't know, appearance and spotlight on him the way Bernie Williams does because he was the center fielder of the Yankees. That's all I'm saying. Doesn't mean he's bad, but it means there are a lot of people. He's a dime a dozen guitar player around New York City.
All right, fair enough. Here's post number three. This is November 14th, 2013. I don't think people can understand how devastated my sister is when I just called her to tell her that Debbie Gibson was booed at Madison Square Garden. Is that person Al Dukes, Jerry Recco, Evan Roberts, or Chris McMonagle?
Al Dukes.
You're wrong.
Evan? Evan?
They got to get something wrong.
Evan?
I got to tell you. I'm an attractive woman. Yes, it is me.
Wow. Your sister was into Debbie Gibson.
My
huh?
sister wasn't into Debbie Gibson.
She was
My
Debbie
sister
Gibson.
Is into Debbie Gibson.
Still?
Like, even in 2025, if Debbie, and now I think she's Deborah Gibson. I think she's no longer Debbie. Debbie's when she was younger. Now she's Deborah. But
wow.
Obsessed with Debbie Gibson. What I can't remember is why she was at Madison Square Garden. Like, what was I doing on November 14th, 2013? And why would people boo Debbie Gibson?
You had to have been at a Knicks game, right? Knicks-Nets?
I'm assuming it's a Knicks game. If you go back to November 14th, 2013, if there is a Knicks game.
There
I think
is. They were home. They lost to the Houston Rockets 109-106.
Did Jamal Crawford have a big game that day? No, I'm off by years. Forget it. He wasn't on that team.
Why were you at a Rockets-Knicks game that night?
Why not? I'm a sports talk host. What does that mean?
Melo scored 45 that night, though.
Was I even at this game?
Harden 36.
Yeah, I don't even think I was at this game.
Wow.
I think I may have seen Debbie Gibson on the screen and she got booed. And I heard boos. Or maybe I made the whole thing up just to lie to my sister and make her upset.
What a Knick roster. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that year was the year after they won the 54 games.
Right.
So they had a very disappointing follow-up to that season. Anyhow, yeah, you're right. That was me. And finally, March 20th, 2015. No other body part changes size and firmness randomly throughout the day like a penis does. What a mystery.
It's a true take.
Well, it was like having sex.
Is that person Tommy Lugauer, Jerry Recco, Greg Giannotti, or Al Dukes?
It's got to be Al, right?
Ball hammock.
It is Al Dukes, yes. No other body part changes size and firmness randomly throughout the day like, yes, it does. What a mystery. It is a great observation.
It is an observation. The only problem I have with the observation
what?
Is to tweet that out means you're mid-observation.
Oh, you mean like he was dealing with that as it was happening?
Yeah, there might have been a flagpole raised and then he went to Twitter with it.
But in fairness, a lot of times that's accidental. Like, that's not done with a purpose. Like, you're in a taxi or you're in an Uber, and the way it's driving, there's a certain vibration that causes that. So it may have just been a self-evaluation that wasn't inappropriate. It just kind of happens.
Vibrating in the car causes things for you?
Well, no, I'm not saying for me, but when you're driving in a car, that's never happened? Or just randomly, it's like, whoa.
When I'm driving in the car?
Well, no, you're in an Uber, you're in a taxi.
I can honestly tell you I've never had that happen in a rideshare.
I think you're lying.
No. Now, look, the right couch pillow comes along, sure.
Oh, jeez. You've never had the accidental?
In a car?
Yeah.
No.
Go over some bumps.
Unless I have a hustler in the back seat, no.
Yeah, no, I've experienced that. Not recently, but yeah, in the past. I've had that happen before.
Man, those presidential museum trips really turn you on, huh?
Maybe it was during one of my dry funks that where it just, you know,
or
happened,
you know,
out of nowhere.
I'm never listening to a Drive Home Rico again.
Ever. Not with that's going on.
No.
Does this sound like Evan was on a date coming back from like Citi Field and this is what he told his date? It's the bumps!
Yeah, exactly.
In the pool!
Exactly. I can promise you two things. A, it's never happened during a Rico, number one. And number two,
thank you.
It was a long time ago. But I'm if anything, I'm defending Al. You're asking why he brought this up in the middle of the day.
So you think he was in the backseat of a cab and the right vibrations and bumps came along and he said, let me tweet this because it moved?
I think there was an accidental movement and he went to Twitter to express, hey, it's so weird that this happens to this body part and no other body part. Whip out the jumbo pack.
And he is kind of right. Like, besides Pinocchio, our noses stay the same. Like, they don't change based on something happening.
But what about
our
your ears? Ankles swelling up after a long day on your feet.
Do they really, though?
Oh, yeah. You eat enough salt, they will.
See, I've never even noticed that. And if it does happen, like, I didn't notice it, but that doesn't happen with any other body part. So,
I mean,
it's a great observation by Al.
Do you count like a fingernail as a body part? Does that count?
No.
How about your height? You grow in height?
No. First of all, okay,
he means within minutes.
Yeah, like it can change and then go back. Like your hair growing or a fingernail growing, I mean, things grow. I think it's more, it grows, it goes back, it grows, it changes. The way Al described it so eloquently.
By the way, Evan said never before in a Drive Home Rico. Mets win the World Series, he's driving back. That will change.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Pete Hoffman's nipples will be hard, too.
3 million views on that bad boy.
Yep.
This is the Rico Brogna Podcast.
I can't even, you know, maybe this is how jaded I am. Maybe it's the fact that the summer is basically here now. I'm about to turn 42 years old. I've actually given up that I'm ever going to see a championship. Like, I can't even picture it happening now. So when you say, oh, during the Drive Home Rico after they win the World Series, I'm like, yeah.
That's so negative.
Come on, man.
It's true, though.
Worst case, you're halfway home in life.
So, you know what really hit me?
Okay.
Over the weekend, I was visiting my parents. Okay?
All right.
And my sister was there, my brother-in-law, my kids were there, my nephew was there. And randomly, I realized, my dad told me, you know, we kept audio cassettes of the overnights you did back in 2004, 2005, 2006.
Those are supportive parents. That's great.
Absolutely. And so my brain immediately popped to Tiki Barber. And I said, I have to find what I said about Tiki during his retirement thing. It was such a huge controversy at this radio station. Like,
during his retirement thing. You mean his retirement?
Well, no. It leaked out.
Right.
Which he's openly talked about.
Yeah.
It pissed him off that it did. And it felt that it's been a long time that there was controversy around the lead up to his retirement. So I wanted to go back and listen to the overnights and hear if young Evan was destroying Tiki. Mm-hmm. Because that's a brand new segment. That's Tiki Barber versus 22-year-old Evan Roberts. Like, I can't wait to hear it.
Tremendous.
So I've been going back listening to these old audio cassettes of these overnights. And naturally, I hear this excitement that I have, not about radio or life, but about the teams I root for. Like, you know, gee golly, the Mets, yeah, the Jets. Ah. And I hear that kind of naivete that I have in my voice. And as I'm listening to it, I got depressed. I'm like, boy, I wish I could go back in time and tell this little schmuck, this little schmucky 22-year-old doing the overnights, you're a loser. Like, you'll have fun here at the Fan and have success, but you will never see anybody win anything.
I'm a loser.
The Jets are going to be in the playoffs literally three times in that course of the next 20-plus years. The Mets will have one World Series run, yippity-doo-dah. Then they're going to lose in painful fashion. And, you know, the Nets, forget about them. They're even bigger losers. So I think that has kind of woken me up to the fact that it's not even going to happen, winning a championship.
How could you say that? The NBA now is going parity-driven. You don't know?
No, I
you
know.
Don't know?
Trust me, I know.
And the Mets just got Juan Soto for 15 years.
Don't do that. Don't turn this into a troll. Trust me, I know.
It's not a troll.
Let's go to John in Danbury. How are you, John?
Well, whenever any of those teams actually win, you're going to have to change the podcast name to the Rico Boner Podcast.
That's a good name. That's a good name. He may be right. I mean, that could be true. I don't know how I'll react, but that is certainly on the table.
You won't need your hands to drive the car at that point.
That's a night to stay off the Whitestone Expressway if I've ever seen one.
I don't even know what that means, but okay. Thank you for that.
I'm whipping one out.
Let's go to Josh in Smithtown. Good afternoon, Josh.
Now I know why Evan likes taking road trips to these sporting events. Also, you know, I think I know why you fell down that rabbit hole with your with the numbers. You checked your bank account. It's like, oh, another zero. What do I call this? Oh, another zero. What do I call this?
Stop it.
<You're> funny. But just really quickly, as far as the Knicks go, I was at a wedding, and, you know, we're trying to keep track of the score as the game's going on. And my brother-in-law asked me, you know, what's the score? And I go, oh, they're down 20. And he looked at me and said, oh, they've been there before. And it was with this, like, confidence of it's almost like you're more comfortable with the team being down 20 than being up 20. Because up 20, they take the foot off the gas. Or it's like something clicks when they're down, and they just, like, find this other gear. And it was just this confidence that I think some Knicks fans have even when they fall down.
It's a great point, and it's so damn true. Like, this team, and you see it over this run against Boston specifically, and obviously what happened the other night, they're just equipped when they face adversity. And by the way, that's a great sign of a team. It's why I've had confidence in them throughout this run after bad losses, that they'll respond, because that's what a team who responds to horrible losses does. That's a team who responds to a horrible half, who can erase the first 43 minutes of a basketball game and overcome that, because that's the reality about the NBA. You know, the adage that I hate is just watch the last 2 minutes. I don't believe that at all. But the Knicks are proof that even if you play 42 or 43 bad minutes, you can erase that.
Yes, you can.
You can erase that. And the Knicks have proven to do that. Now, that does not mean that there's any Knicks fan alive that's going to say, hey, let's go down 20 tonight.
No.
Because that's where we have our best success. You prefer the game that you saw a couple weeks ago against the Celtics, the closeout game, when you just beat the crap out of them. And then there's no stress whatsoever. But I think what's really important in these 20-point games, and the Celtics missed it even if we didn't realize it at the time. The Pacers missed it even if we didn't realize it at the time. And even the Knicks in game one missed it and we don't realize it at the time. There are small moments in these games where you need to step on the gas and finish them off. Where a 20-point game can easily become a 25-point game.
You never have enough.
You never have enough. You can't take the foot off the gas. And there are these sequences that are more important than you realize at the time. And I'll give you one from game three. Late first half, it is an 18-point game. Pacers are up by 18. Mm-hmm. This is the final 2 minutes or so. Actually, this is the end of the first half, if I'm not mistaken. Mikal Bridges hits a three with about 5 seconds to go. Because they were down 15 at the half, if memory serves correct. So I think I have this right. It was the final possession of the first half. And the Knicks are down by 18. You got to stop. An 18-point game at the half feels very different than a 15-point game at the half.
Totally.
And Bridges made that three with about five to go, and then the Pacers threw up like a full-court shot, half-court shot, didn't go down, and it's a 15-point game. And while you're still down by 15, it's not ideal. That last shot was sneakily important. And I think those are the things I'm talking about. Like, when you have a team down, and if you're a Knicks fan, you're hoping you're on the right side of this tonight, where you have a big lead, you got to keep stepping on them. You can't allow a team the confidence to come back. And I think Boston twice, and obviously what happened in game three, the Knicks have done a great job of kind of taking advantage of those little opportunities that your opponent gives you.
And don't sit back and take lazy threes that clank off, because that's where Boston got done in. And I thought Indiana at times.
Well, you can never get lazy is the point.
Right.
But you have to treat every possession in the postseason, especially against a team like the Knicks, and vice versa, because the Pacers have shown they can come back. So it works on both sides, that you have to have that killer instinct for the full 48 minutes. And I know that's a cliche, but it's just true. How many times do we have to sit here and watch on the road? Like, that's the crazy part, too. All these comebacks we're talking about are the teams coming back on the road where you think, you figure the momentum is so against you because of that crowd noise, and it's not the case.
I do feel bad for that one guy, though, that just called. him and his brother. Memorial Day Sunday, you're forcing people into a wedding? A little selfish.
Well, we heard about this going into the break, that there were a few examples of weddings interfering with Knick playoff games.
Oof. But and Sunday night, Memorial Day weekend? Imagine being forced to do that on Sunday, Memorial Day weekend?
Can I defend it for a second?
Sure. Yeah, it's cheap, yeah.
Not even the cheap part. Wasn't even going to do the cheap part. And forget the Knicks for a second. Like, take the sports out of it. One of our bosses jokingly said, because I had sent our bosses our vacation schedules commingled, so they know when we're available to do Jet Camp and Giant Camp.
I love it.
So one of our bosses said, do you plan like your whole life around sports? And I said, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're damn right. You should be happy about that too, by the way.
And everybody in our lives plans their lives around sports because we do.
That's right. We taught them early.
Yeah.
Like my wife knew that the moment she met me. It's not like I sprung it upon her out of nowhere. So the point is, forget the sports in this discussion. If you're going to have a wedding, and let's say it's a travel wedding, let's say people have to get up and they got to move, isn't it easier and actually more convenient to have it on a weekend that's a three-day weekend as opposed to, oh, I got to rush back to work? Like, I actually think, and plus Memorial Day and Labor Day and those weekends where you have the three-day weekends, like, it's barbecue. It's hanging out. It's nothing crazy.
Well, look,
it's like you have to be with your family the way Christmas and Thanksgiving are. So I disagree with you.
Well, let me admit something. I got married on Memorial Day weekend. I just wanted to be clear.
And you're complaining about it?
But I got married Memorial Day weekend on Friday. I think Friday's had a good... I think when you get to Sunday, that's like a rare... You get a one... How many Sundays do you get where you have nothing to wake up for Monday? Three a year? Two a year? That's the way, and you know, I got to get invited to a wedding.
So you regret having your wedding on Memorial Day?
No, I liked that it was a Friday. I wouldn't care if it was Friday, Saturday. I think by the time Sunday rolls around, Sunday's that free pass on a Sunday you rarely get. Now I got to commit to a wedding?
Yeah, but you're still off on Monday, so it makes the travel back to where you have to go a lot easier. It's not a Sunday into a Monday. I don't think that's bad at all.
We agree to disagree.
Is it cheaper on Memorial Day weekend? Is that why you did it?
Now, backstory to me. Me and my wife had a lot of money stolen from us by a wedding call. For our original wedding date.
Jeez.
Which was, sports fan, by the way, late February, I was getting married.
Mm.
So when the wedding hall closed down, the owners left, fled the country. Okay. This happened on Long Island.
Wow.
There's a story out there.
Wow.
So we were in scramble mode, and the wedding hall that we had picked up us and a couple other people from this hall, and they had dates to fill. And one of the dates to fill, we got a cheaper date, was Memorial Day week on that Friday.
Did I ever tell you about me getting caught searching for cheap weddings? Do you know about this?
No.
So me and my wife get engaged. All right, very exciting stuff. We're all very happy. I am sitting at a Brooklyn Nets game with her. Okay. At halftime, you know, we're starting the beginning stages of, oh, where should we get married? When should we get married? Right? Beginning stages.
Okay.
So I did a simple Google search. What I didn't realize is there was someone sitting behind me who was staring at my tablet, staring at what I was searching.
Oh, no.
And by the way, we all do this now. Like, if someone's in front of you with their phone, sometimes you glance. Like, what are they texting? What are they saying?
Firmness in a cab. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, I innocently Googled weddings under $1,000.
Oh, my God.
They're called third grade birthday parties, you know.
Now, to be fair, it was just a Google search. I was not literally thinking about a wedding for under $1,000. It was, let me see what they have. Let me just see. And I did wedding under $10,000, weddings for above $100,000. Yeah. Like, I ran the gamut with my searches. But you know the way we Google, like all of us, we'll Google some weird things. Like, if our Google searches were public, it'd probably be pretty embarrassing.
That's for sure.
So someone saw it and then called up the next day and said, hey, Joe, can I tell you something about your partner? Yeah, what do you got, bro? He's trying to have a wedding for under $1,000. And I'm like, sir, first of all, really? You're staring at my Google searches? What are you doing?
That's rough.
And second of all, I searched a lot of things. That's the one thing you notice. But trust me, I searched a lot of other things.
That is creepy that people just stare behind you while you're on your phone.
You know what you got to do? You got to buy that little screen protector where you can't see your screen unless you're directly in front of it.
I can't stand it. My wife has it. Every time she's in bed, tries to show me a video, I can't see.
Yeah. Well, because it's not for you. Yeah. It's for her.
Exactly.
I was thinking about this for tonight. So I'm going to the Met game tonight, okay? And I'm obviously watching the Knick game. But you know me. You know, Knick
Mets
fan.
Mets, White Sox.
What was that?
You're the best. Mets, White Sox, right back in that building.
Yeah, they're right. Mets, White Sox, I'm back in the building.
And where were you yesterday, Evan?
Mets, White Sox.
Unbelievable.
So
imagine going to two games in a series.
So I'm obviously going to watch the Knicks game. But you know me. I'm vindictive now towards Knick fans. I don't want them to watch the game. So if I put the screen protector on.
You're unbelievable.
No one else can see it but me.
You know what?
I'm not going to do that, though.
But, Evan, this is where I will put my foot down. You're not a Knicks fan. Go enjoy it watching the screen. I've made excuses for Kershaw. I've made excuses for Paul Skeens. If you're a Knicks fan that dares step foot in Citi Field tonight to watch the White Sox, get lost. You're not a Knicks fan.
I mean, in fairness, Jonathan Cannon's got a good-looking arm. You may want to watch him pitch.